Hello everybody, James here, and it is Ask Dutch Anything, episode 6, where we ask your questions that you submit to the email questionsfordutch@gmail.com. We have books somewhere, we have t-shirts somewhere, all links are in the descriptions, you know the deal, for goodness sake. But for now, we've got, I don't know, 30-odd minutes. We've got to answer as many of your questions as possible. And the first two are video questions, Dutch. So, and I've not primed you with these. I don't think you've seen them. So, first one is from Chris M. Could you please watch this video and try not to laugh? I will sort that out 1 second. And we're back, and here it is. For our audio listeners, maybe give us a bit of a running commentary.
Okay.
Right,
where is it? Where is this from?
Don't know. I don't know why I don't have audio either. There it is.
Watch this show, Meltzer says.
Shit, it's a song. I can't have that on. Okay, so two great big fat guys.
Yeah.
In an independent show. Hmm.
What is he doing?
Tell us.
Is he going to? No, he's not.
He's going to go coast to coast.
No, he's not. Oh, I missed, so I'll just kick you. Oh, yeah.
Okay, tell everyone. In fact, while we watch this again, tell everybody what just happened.
So you want me to tell them?
Yep.
Okay, these big two, I don't know if you can say fat anymore, robust gentlemen in the ring, and they got big bellies, and one of them's going to the corner, and I'm calling it as it's happening right now. And he's, I don't know, everybody in this crowd is saying, no, he's not going to make it. And here he goes. And correct, he didn't make it. So I got to cover up with this pawpaw. Bam. I'll just give him the big kick. And that covers up my, mistake. No, actually, he said, don't try to laugh at it. Well, you laugh at it, but then you say, I don't know. It's not. It's more stupid than it is funny. And I don't know what gave the idea to the guy that he could make it coast to coast.
Yeah, so he's I don't even know why he's trying to do a coast to coast splash. That must be at least a 16-foot by 16-foot ring.
Well, he covered about 6 feet.
I'm surprised he didn't cover 6 feet through the floor.
Oh, well, it didn't work, so, but that is that'll go down in history as one of the biggest mistakes, or the bloopers.
Botches.
What do they call these?
Botches.
Botches. About, that's not even a botch. You can usually see botches come when you're trying to do a good move and they screw it up. This was just a complete fuck up. That's what it was.
Have we considered that he was splashing the Invisible Man and it was a triple threat match?
No, we did not. That might be a good reason for him to explain that.
Yeah.
He says, what you don't know is an invisible man was coming into the ring and he tripped and fell and was right there in front of me. What am I going to do? Just let him escape untouched? So I just dived on him and squashed him. And you said, you squashed him? He said, yeah, you don't see him, do you? So he disappeared.
Well, he could have got the pin as well. But never mind, the referee wasn't clued up. We will move on to our second question and second video. Parts unknown. What did it feel like taking the clothesline from hell from Bradshaw? And we have video footage of this.
I want to see that, and I'm going to tell you what it felt like.
Bear with me. And we're back. So the question was, what does it feel like to take the clothesline from hell? And I'm just going to blow this down.
And we're going to show me taking a clothesline from Mr. Bradshaw.
Here we go. This is when you break up. I'm sorry you had to use the overlay on this because it's WWF stuff.
Oh, look at there, hitting me like that. That little bastard.
He turned up with the bastard game.
Watch this. There you go. See? And what did that feel like?
So what did it feel like then?
Nothing.
Really?
Because, you know, hey, I know he's coming. So am I going to stand there? And I'm going. Plus, I think he didn't lay his whole arm in there. He laid more of his shoulder in there, which, see, that arm can be brought with some force, or it can be held back just a little bit. I think John held that back, and he didn't hit me. What catches you? If he catches you out here, that's where the force is. If he catches you in close, he can't move faster than his body. So when he's getting close, you're going. So it didn't hurt me at all. So
do you know, just looking at it then, I'm sorry,
viewers. But it may have been that 30 minutes of begging I did him in the dressing room. I said, please don't take my head off. Please, please. And he had sympathy on me.
Looking at it two times there. So I'm sorry for everybody. We had to use the overlay. It's WWF, WWE footage and, you know, content ID for YouTube and stuff like that. Although we do have the rights to use it because we're reviewing it. But I was looking at it thinking, and he more went into you with his body and then just swung the arm like around you. So he really looked like he was protecting you there. Because it seems like
he was.
When he's going to knock your head off, he's going to go all arm.
Yeah, because I told John, I said, John, if you hurt me, I'm going to shoot you. And he's kind of believed me, so he did. No, to John's credit, he took it easy on me, and I'm glad he did. He's laid that in on a lot of guys, and you could hear it at ringside. It's skin against skin. Whack! He caught Jake the Snake with it several times, and Jake finally said, he come to me, and Jake says, hey, you need to talk to your boy. And I said, Jake, listen, I think you need to talk to him because you're the one taking it. I don't know what I'm going to say to him. You tell him that he's killing you. But I think there's a little more to that story because I think there was a little bit of animosity between Mr. Bradshaw and Jake. I won't get into it now, but he told me later. So
with that being said, apart from Jake's, and I had a feeling you'd say Jake, apart from Jake, who else do you remember Bradshaw just really just clattering them with the clothesline?
Well, everybody you work with, basically. I mean, hey, those job guys, oh, he'd rip them in two. Those little enhancement talents. But see, they don't care. They're there. First of all, they're happy to be there. They're happy to be backstage with the stars. They're happy they can dress here and the star is dressing over there. It's a big deal to them. So if they go out against Bradshaw and they're in the same ring with Bradshaw, that gives them a certain bragging rights back home. Hey, I may have lost, but I made the show, which is, you know, a vast improvement from all the rest of them who wanted to do it. And so he got a little tagged. It didn't kill him. It didn't hurt him that badly. I tell you who took a bad one one time was Al Snow.
No.
We were in on a European tour, and I remember they're having this match, and I forgot where we were. We were in England somewhere, and here come John with that clothesline, and he tagged Al, and I heard Al. I bet people 10 rows back could hear him, like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck? And I went, oh my God. He said, God damn it, you killed me. And he laid it in, but I think he eased up on Al a little bit later on because I think he started liking him. And if he liked you, a lot of these guys, if they like you, they'll take it easy on you. I tell you, another crew who, if they liked you, they'd take it easy on you, was the Steiner brothers. If they liked you, you're okay. If they didn't much care for you, nah, whatever happened, happened. Which they shouldn't be that way, but, and I mean, they could really hurt somebody if they wanted to. They were just, let me say, they were just snug with it. And I've seen them lay it in. I see some of those guys come back, they're like, they're seeing stars walking through the door. So, sometimes when you hear, oh, well, it's all fake, it's all this. No, sometimes you get that bell rung big time. So I remember Scott D'Amore one time. He made a WWF show, and he was sitting there, and I could see him sitting on the bench, and his head was like this, and And I think Bradshaw came in and said, "You okay? You okay?" "Oh yeah, I'm okay." But I don't know what he was going to say. He was stunned then. I don't know what he's going to say if he wasn't okay. "Why did you do that?" No, he was good to get the words out. But anyway, some of those clotheslines hurt.
Next one, Chris Gonzalez. This is an interesting one. Dutch, what wrestler in the territories you felt should have been a top guy but wasn't because of tragedy or politics in the locker room that ruined him? Thank you for your great podcast, sir.
Well, I just saw one. Marty Jannetty.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. The Dark Side of the Ring. I've not seen it.
Should have been a bigger star. But, and I'm going to tell a story about these guys here. One second, would you like this? But they had a habit of, Marty had a habit of just screwing up everything, really. I'm on a plane. We're going somewhere from somewhere. I think I get on the plane in Atlanta, maybe, and we're going to Dallas or wherever. And I'm like in the middle of the plane, and it wasn't crowded. There's a lot of seats behind me. But like in the very back, I think Shawn Michaels sat on the back row, and they had two girls sitting in front of him, and then and Marty Jannetty, I think. And then I could hear the girls laughing in the back, and they started drinking and all kind of. I didn't know what was going on, but I would look back because he was getting a little bit tipsy. And I remember Marty walked up beside my seat, and I said, "Who are your friends back there?" He said, "I don't know. We're going to find out." So when we landed in Dallas, everybody got up to leave the plane except who you think? Mm-hmm. The girls and their friend, their guy friend, and they were like this. They were completely knocked out in the back. And Marty thought that was the funniest thing. Because now they're going to miss their next flight. They got to be helped off the plane. So what he did, he dropped him a couple of somas or roofies or whatever in their drinks. And they just passed out. And he thought it was... Now, I don't think Shawn Michaels had anything to do with it. But I think it was just Marty being Marty. And nothing happened to the girls except he just kind of drugged them up so they had to be helped off the plane. I mean, they couldn't even talk. They woke them up before we finally got it. And they were like this. They were as in no condition to go anywhere. So guess what I did. I got off the plane. I didn't know Marty Jannetty. I didn't know Shawn Michaels. I didn't know any of them. I went my way, and I said, "I'll see you later."
Put the hat down.
So I don't know. I don't know what happened to those girls, but I guess they made it. So whatever.
So you watched The Dark Side of the Ring then. So what was surprising about it? Give us a little review of the show.
Well, it just basically said how they got together. And
he being Marty and Shawn, I presume.
Marty and Shawn, putting Marty and Shawn together. And I think he said that he was kind of steered him Shawn's way because they could see a little money in him and just being green. So they finally put them together and they put them together with that gimmick and it got over big time. I think they called them a different name.
Yeah, they were the Midnight Rockers at one point. Did you see them in Memphis? Because they were there briefly.
No, I didn't see them in Memphis. But they made the rounds. I think they went to Memphis. They went to Continental. Then I think they went there.
Yeah, this was AWA this was as well, I think they went. To,
okay, yeah, yeah they went yeah. there. And this was before the developmental thing in Atlanta that they have now. I mean, in Orlando, a WWE. So they made it, and they did well. And I forgot what happened. They got into a fight And Vince was looking to split them up anyway. And Vince has an innate ability. He's not always right, but he has an innate ability to tell when the shelf life is over or expiring. So he was just looking for a reason to split them. And since I think they'd had a little bit of trouble, or Marty had, and that's when they come up with the barbershop segment. And that segment, if you watch it back, it's well done. It's really well done. And when he went through when he went through that glass, you knew it was over then. And people, kids, they actually cried. And I think that's when Al Snow got with Marty and did the New Rockers. But that didn't meet with much success. But no, excuse me, guys.
Well, you cough out. I sort of know the Marty story. There was a few years gap. Marty would be fired, eight or nine times, I think, throughout his career. I think the Al Snow tag team came a few years later. I spoke with Al quite recently as well. And he said that he said a couple of things about Marty, and one of them was, I've never seen someone pull as many girls as Marty did. He just said he was just a magnet. He was just that was his true talent. But the other thing is actually how talented a wrestler Marty was, and that gets overshadowed by his personal actions and penchant for partying a bit too much.
Okay, he could pull a lot of girls. That's true, because he was just that guy. What got me later on, I think it was last year or not too long ago, he was talking about his incident in Columbus, Georgia, talking about making a guy disappear.
Yeah.
It wasn't his first time in making a guy disappear, which sounds like he killed a guy. And it was taken with such belief that the Columbus, Georgia Police Department actually launched an investigation into it to see if they could match up any names or anybody who went missing about that time. And he was telling a wrestling angle line that he was, but he was given the rest of it. So you got to hear it. I mean, I bet the police were looking at him like, what the hell are you saying? But it made some national news. I think it was funny. You can go out and say something and people have enough. They know enough about you to say, well, that could be true. But they never could find anything. I don't think Marty killed anybody. I just don't. I don't think he's that way. But by him saying that, admitting it to the world that he had done that, well, they were like, they had to investigate somewhat, but they found nothing. Yeah, you'll enjoy this episode on Marty Jannetty.
I will watch it. I didn't have enough time. I was going to watch it before we came on today. Next question. Thomas R. Skidmore. I'm really enjoying your stories of your illustrious career stretching back to the old territory days. That said, I have a question or two about Mil Máscaras. Did you have any matches or encounters with Mil? And if so, how did you perceive him as both a wrestler and a person? I deeply appreciate your tales of the wrestling road and look forward to hearing more.
Well, as a matter of fact, I did have a match with Mil. I think I was like in my second year.
Really? I honestly thought you were going to say no.
What?
I thought
hey,
you
brother.
Just, I thought you just never had a match with him.
I have world renown. But he came to Atlanta to work for an opposition group. And because the booker was named Tom Renesto, who was a Mexican-American, and he was part of the infamous The Assassins tag team, which I learned so much from just listening to him. And they had a way of talking And they made them, they made you believe them in the ring and on an interview. But he was booking, and Mil Mascaras came in, and I went into the ring, and I was slamming him and dropping elbows on him. And I came back. Of course, you know, he beat me about 5 minutes. I come back and they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "What do you mean?" "He don't take bumps like that for anybody." I said, "What?" I said, "No, he don't take slams and whatever you were doing or whatever." I think I suplexed him one time, short one. He said, "He don't do that." And he never stopped me. And nobody told me don't bump him. I didn't know he was a big star. I didn't know. I thought he was just a really good-looking guy as Mil Mascaras over there in the corner. And we had a little five-minute match. And I bumped him a couple of times, but I did not know that he wasn't supposed to take him, or he didn't like to take him. But he didn't say nothing in the ring or didn't stop me, so I did it. That's the last time I worked with him, by the way. Well, I never worked with him again.
I'm just trying to think of where you may have seen him. Did you see him times afterwards? I think he was in WCW briefly when you were in like 1990.
I don't think I ever saw him again. I bet next time you saw me, he went, "Oh, God, I'll go the other way."
You like the one guy who had the balls to like suplex him and stuff.
You know, he's not that big. You know, he's like silk. You know, you can't even feel him. He's so light. So for him to take a hard bump like a slam, that comes as a joke to him. I don't blame him. Mm-hmm. He drew a lot of money in Mexico. Of course, the mask is the way to go in Mexico anyway, because that's a part of their culture. But what does Mil Mascaras mean? 1,000 masks?
1,000 masks, yeah. I've actually got... I don't know if you can see behind me, but I've got some replica masks, and one of them's a Mascaras mask.
Hey, do you have a what was Savio's
Texas,
name? In
I haven't got Texas Quang. Dirt.
Do you have a Quang mask?
No, I don't think there was much call for Quang mask. You know what? I bet someone has made one. And
maybe.
You never know. I want to ask a couple of things about Mil. Did you ever see him with the mask off?
Never saw him.
Did he shower with the mask on? We hear that a bit.
Yes, he did. He never took the mask off in the dressing room. Never.
Where was his mask?
What if? Listen, this is the deal. Yeah. I thought about what if he was driving a car, and they pulled him over. "Sir, can I see your driver's license?" He spoke English. "No speak English." And he gives him some Mexican driver's license or something. "And you're going to have to take that mask off." I wonder, did he ever take that mask off?
He did, I believe, in cars and airports. I mean, obviously, he'd have to on airports, even pre-9/11, I imagine.
Well, he protected his identity. And I think it's still protected to today.
Where was this match? Was this Atlanta, did you say? Or was it somewhere else that you had with him?
I think it was at Atlanta on a Friday night, like the big show.
What was this? I mean, did he have any drawing power in Atlanta at that time? Because I always associate Mil going to areas with heavy Latino populations, like a New York or, you know, the border towns in Texas. So I was just sort of wondering, how can he pop to Atlanta for a week?
Well, they didn't know him. I don't know. I think he was there because of Tom Ernesto. Yeah. I think they knew each other before. And he was coming through, and they just did it. It wasn't there long. It wasn't there maybe a week, maybe. But see, that's what wrestlers used to do. Say a wrestler was leaving. Let me tell you how stupid I was when I started wrestling. I was wrestling in Georgia, and I'm so stupid. I just thought they wrestled in, like, North Carolina, because I'd seen that North Carolina Mid-America tape, I guess, not Mid-Atlantic tape. And a guy told me, he said, "You know, you want to go work in California?" And I went, "Well, why would I go work in California?" Mm-hmm. He said, they wrestle out there. I said, "They do?" I didn't know. He said, "I tell you what I'll do. If you want to go, you tell me if you get a month's, a head start, say this is July the 1st, you want to start August 1st, tell me, and we can book you all the way across. We'll book you through, Alabama and Mississippi, Texas, and then, or if you want to go up to Tennessee and around, we can book you 4 weeks on the way out there. So, and you won't be working every day, but you'll pay for your trip. I didn't even know that, but I never decided to go to California or even go anywhere that was more than a 4-hour drive from where I was, because I had a chance to go to Oregon one time, and I'm in Nashville. And I said, yeah, because I had a guy call me, man, you would love it up here, And I said, okay. I got out a Rand McNally roadmap, which is the wrestler's go-to tool. And I was looking at Tennessee here and Oregon way up here. That's a lot of miles and a lot of driving. And I says, I'll kind of take a little bit of a rain check on that. I don't think I'll come. But I heard a lot of stories about Oregon, but never really wanted to go.
So actually, a couple of people wrote in asking why you never went to Oregon, and I actually wrote back to them instead of asking it on the podcast, because it was essentially the answer you just gave. But so there you go. There's the answer once again. Next question. Kevin Ramsey. Dutch, how was Michael Hayes in creative? I presuming WWF he means. I don't know if he was in creative in WCW.
Michael Hayes was good if he wasn't drinking. If he was drinking, he was better. Michael had a mind for creative, and he had a mind for the flair. I mean, not for Ric Flair, but because he got it. When he went out there to the music they went out to, and I mean, he kind of understood it, and kind of knew how to read the room, so to speak. Say he would go out on a Friday night in Dallas. They had a lot of heat there. So he just took that. And I don't think he booked Texas, but I think they used a lot of his ideas, and his ideas were good. He booked with me in Florida. I remember he come in one day and he says, I forgot what he said. Oh yeah. He said, he's drunk as hell. He sat down in the chair. And I'm like, desperate for ideas. I said, you got anything for us, Mike? He went, yep. Let's drain the Gulf. Let's drain the Gulf of Mexico is what he said. And I said, what the hell? And I knew he was drunk. But then we got to talking. And as we got to talking, he was kind of sobering up a little bit. And we come up with some good ideas that day. But he was very good at creative. I always enjoyed being around Michael.
What was his duties, his jobs in WWE during the Zeb Coulter run? When would you sort of interact with Michael, for what reasons?
Oh, he was, I don't know exactly what he did. I never traveled with him in the Zeb Coulter era.
Yep. Because he seems to almost be like an agent, but like, I don't know if he's like an agent, but he's like above the agents, but he sometimes does agent jobs. It's sort of hard to define what he does.
He's like Arn was there. They would take the top matches. They work with the Cenas and the Batistas and the Undertakers. And that was their responsibility, because they took the top matches. The little matches is where they needed them down there too. But because they got along with the guys, and because guys like Arn and guys like Michael had they had longevity, and he had what's it called when you have a past behind you?
Tenure.
They had that. Oh, my dog's keeping me from getting eat up by the mailman. I used to have a dog like this, a little Boston Terrier. You couldn't get him to bark. He'll bark at a leaf falling off a tree. And he's scared of his own shadow. But anyway,
I'm leaving this in. You know.
Say what now? He's barking.
I'm leaving this in. Just so
you're leaving this in.
Yeah, just so people know. Just
shut up, Oscar. I'm telling the truth, just like I told you this morning over coffee, you little bastard. But anyway, but he's up and away. No, I think they put him in those top matches with those top guys because of their they accepted them. And because if Michael Hayes would say something, it's not like some newly hired agent that didn't know what he's talking about. They would take Arn and they would take Michael as vice before they'd take a lot of other guys.
Spencer Yates. Hello, Dutch. I was wondering if you ever met or had any dealings with legendary outlaw promoter Jack Pfeffer. He was known for threatening to expose wrestling in local areas to get his talent booked on wrestling cards.
Heard a lot of stories about him, but never met him. And I think almost by the time that I got in, I think he was an older man then. But a lot of stories about him and how cheap he was. And, you know, he ran by the seat of his pants. And he promoted Chicago around Chicago, didn't he?
I think he went anywhere he could probably get into. But, I mean, he was promoting in like the 30s, I think. Maybe even the 20s.
Yeah, but there was a lot of stories about him. But I never met him. He was way before my time.
Okay. Another one that I'm not sure you can have an answer for, but I'll just ask it anyway. Caleb. Hi, Dutch and James. Greetings from Leeds, UK. Love the podcast. Did Dutch work with John Tenta / Earthquake? And if so, are there any memorable stories? One of the best big men, in my opinion, or the best?
Never worked with him. Never was in WWE, WWF with him. And I don't know if I've ever even met him. I think he lives here in Florida.
No, he's long since dead. 2006.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he died in like 2006 of stomach
when
cancer.
When did he die?
Yeah, 2006. He was in his early 40s.
Wow. So when was he in WWF?
Late 80s. Very briefly in 98 as well.
Yeah, well.
No, you would have never crossed paths with him, but I just wanted to get that out there just to ask.
I didn't even know he's dead.
There you go. Okay, I'm going to move on. Edward, memories of working with Bill Alfonso, Daddy?
Yep. Hilarious. He was a good guy and crazy as hell. He was out of his mind half the time, but not in a threatening way. He was in a funny way. You know, and he had a lot of energy, great referee. He was the referee, I think, in the match with Lex Luger and Bruiser Brody.
Mm-hmm.
Right or not?
I have asked him about that myself. He was, yeah.
And I've watched the match. And even if I was watching the match, even if nobody else heard my voice, I would have no idea of what Luger did, because Brody sold absolutely nothing. Nothing. And you could see Lex saying, well, what now? Well, what now? Well, and in a way, I'm thinking, well, what a stupid finish. But Lex was thinking, well, hell, I guess the only way to get out of here is go over the top, which is what he did. And you know, when you're watching something and, you know, you don't know whether that was planned or not, but all of a sudden he just goes over the top and leaves. The match is over. So, who do they give the match to? They give it to Luger for
leaving?
Yeah,
probably won, yeah.
So, but great referee and a good guy to be around.
Yeah, do you know, I interviewed him last year. I will interview him again because Bill and I have said that we definitely wanted to do a part two. We didn't even get to ECW. But that dude seems to get younger every year. Like, because he looked terrible when he was young. And now, you know, he's got a nice tan. He's got his teeth in. He looks great.
I think he ran through a bad period in his life. So that was the time I knew him. He was insane.
Where did he referee? So was this just in Florida?
Florida. Yeah. And I didn't know him refereeing anywhere else. I just ran across him in Florida. Yeah.
He did refereeing in WWF. But that was a couple of years before you got there in like 93. He was George El Gigante's handler. So
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
See, there's a lot of things I don't know about wrestling unless somebody tells me. Because, you know, if you're watching your own wrestling, paying attention to your own wrestling, unless you're watching a bunch of other stuff or hearing a bunch of other stuff, and the only way I heard other stuff is other guys telling me this is going on in another place. Because I never read The Observer. I never read those dirt sheets. I would read them if they were in the dressing room. But I never read them, even not only for the gossip, I never even read them for the news.
We got so many questions and we've got so little time. I'm going to ask you one more. Do you want to talk about, I'll let you choose. We've got Jim Crockett Promotions. We've got, I don't think you're going to have a good one there. I'm going to leave that one out. Do you know what? I'm going to sit with the Jim Crockett one. Nathan Walls. Would Jim Crockett Promotion still be in existence if they wouldn't have not moved headquarters to Dallas and gone national? If they had stayed with their regular towns, would they still be here?
Well, if they stayed with their regular towns, what they were looking for was to get on national TV and get their exposure up. But would they still be there? No, they wouldn't be there. They just...
Well, Memphis wasn't. I mean, that ran on a shoestring.
Yeah, but Memphis, and you got paid on a shoestring budget. Hmm. Eventually, they couldn't pay you enough to go on the road. I mean, what, you're going to take your car out there and beat your car up and beat your body up for no money? And nobody's going to do that. So Jim Crockett, he wouldn't still be there. I think maybe that what happened when Vince started pushing, and I think they were met instead of just trying to think about what you needed to do. I think he was met by panic by the promoters saying, we got to do this, we're going to do that, we got to band together. I think it was almost a panic, a knee-jerk attempt to stop his advancement. Nothing was going to stop that. He was coming, and he had you. Was he on USA then when he started it?
Vince was on USA in like 84, I think. So yeah, this they were on USA before Jim Crockett started trying to go national. Although they had their own cable set up,
and they had their cable,
and then Vince bought Georgia in Black Saturday, etc., etc.
Okay, if they had stayed on TBS with Turner support, I think they would have ended up with a lot more than what they ended up with, because they had the exposure. But I think Vince took all the, what he was doing, Vince was attacking on two fronts. Not only was he going nationwide, he was taking all the talent too. So, but I think if Crockett, if they'd have slowed down and tried to be patient and try to weed their way through this, I think, like I said, I don't know if they would still be here, but I think they would have had a lot better chance. What happened to Vince just ends up buying them for a penny on a dollar, basically. He bought all their... They bought their company and all their tape library, I think, for $3 million.
Not even that. $2.5 million. The legal fees to buy it was nearly as much as the purchase price. Like, the legal fees was like $1.8 million.
Basically, they just gave it to him.
Yeah.
And he got all that library. And, you know, there are some libraries basically missing. The Memphis library is missing. Mm-hmm.
Continental, a lot of that's missing.
Continental is missing.
Los Angeles, a lot of that's missing.
What about Portland?
A lot of that's missing.
And the, you know what? The Memphis one is missing.
Mm.
Because, well, we need to tell this story one day. They had a fly-by-night artist come in and make friends with Lawler named Larry Burton. You've heard about him.
We will get to Larry Burton on a future episode, because that's its own huge story. I promise you we will. I promise you I'll write it down. just before we sign off, I want to just bring up a couple of things with JCP. So they were selling out arenas. They had big stars. They had their Ric Flairs, their Dusty Rhodes, their Road Warriors, their Magnum TAs at the time, Barry Windham, Four Horsemen. I mean, the Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express. There's dozens of stars. 86, 87, you were there as well. You must have seen the arenas packed. And it almost seems like an ECW thing. It's like, how can the arenas be packed, yet this company is losing millions of dollars?
I don't know. I have no idea. But you see, the money now comes from TV. That's what the NFL money comes from. That's what the NBA money comes from. If you're just relying on house show attendance, you know, you're going to, I don't care how big the house is sometimes, you can lose money. You could go to Madison Square Garden on a sellout and lose money because the tickets weren't that expensive. But they rely on that TV money. And that's where they're getting the money from, and the syndication. But back in those days, it was like an unrefined craft or an unrefined art. How do you get this? So, and they were trying to find that out. But before they found it out, Vince found it out. But see, he was in the media capital of the world. He was in New York City, and they all came to him and said, you have a hell of a product. Of course, he didn't share it with anybody, and damn sure didn't share it with those yahoos down in Charlotte, North Carolina, because I don't know if they would have understood it anyway. But Vince, being the businessman that he is, being in the location he was, being seen by the people that he was being seen by, I think the cards were laid out long before WCW even closed the doors. Mm.
Let me add this then. I know there was the pay-per-view wars between, like, one company would have a pay-per-view and then the other would run a free TV card with top stars, and they'd do that back and forth. That's why the Royal Rumble was invented, in fact. But there's also Jim Crockett buying up Mid-South for a hugely inflated several million. There's Jim Crockett buying up Florida, which was at the time a dead territory. I know we've told the story that they wanted to send you down there for absolutely
no
reason.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they didn't even tell you what the pay was. But, I mean, as far as Jim Crockett himself, or Jim Crockett Jr. himself goes, what else did you know, if anything, of the planes? What else did he spend his money on that just basically, it was like money was like water through his hands?
I have no idea. He didn't have any. Well, he didn't do drugs. He didn't buy and sell drugs. He didn't do that. So, but I don't know what their problem was. I really don't. Buying Florida was one of the most stupidest ideas I ever heard in my life. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just put your own tape in there and have it play on their station?
You could just booked. That's what I'm saying. An event.
And in Mid South, why not put his tape in there and let it play all over?
Do you know Bill was losing supposedly $50,000 a week, and then he still sold his territory for millions to Jim?
You know, just because he bought the territory doesn't mean Vince couldn't come in, and he did. And get another station and pay them to run the show. Mm-hmm. I don't know who was running WCW, but it was run in a way that actually ran it in the ground. I don't know what Bill Watts was spending $50,000 a week
losing $50,000. Yeah,
the damn show wasn't paying the talent. I don't know what he was doing. So, but I'm sure that. We need to get him on here for a guest one day.
Would he?
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't come on.
No. He's. Do you know what? He's done. I'll give them a plug because I really like him. Bradshaw and Briscoe. He did their podcast not long ago, so he's still doing podcasts. Yeah.
Bill Watts. Really, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Get in touch.
Now, Bill is a. I like Bill, but he was a slave driver. He would say, hey, boys, when you get out on the road, if you feel tired, just get out and stop your car and get out and do some calisthenics, do some side straddle hops and some push-ups, then you get ready. I remember before TV, we're sitting there, we're dog-ass tired, he would call a prayer session right before the TV started. And he would have this, who we'd have, he'd have Bill was there, Ted DiBiase,
yeah,
Jake the Snake, and he'd have somebody else, I think Duggan, maybe, I don't know. And we'd all pray together. But I would pray, this was my prayer. They said theirs, and I would say mine. I would pray that some people would actually buy tickets and come see us so I'd get paid that week. That's what I, so, and we do it, and God bless you, man, and praise the Lord. And hell, I don't know if I was in a wrestling dress room or a revival somewhere, but.
Did God hear your prayers, and did Bill start paying you more?
God did not hear my prayers.
Did Bill Watts really hear your prayers?
Actually, my bookings got longer. Instead of getting shorter, they got longer. I one time, you know, going to Oklahoma from Louisiana, from Tulsa and Oklahoma City, that's like 400 one way. One time he booked me up there, and then the next day he booked me 10 miles from the Kansas border. And then I had to come back through Oklahoma City or Tulsa, one of them, and make the trip back. It added about 80 miles to my trip.
How many miles was that in total?
A lot, believe me. And one night, actually, I just slammed my brakes on and locked my car up. Nobody was behind me because I was seeing, I don't know, I was seeing like fence post and trees running out into the road. I was hallucinating on the road. So I went down to, I found like the next, you know, the stop, and I pulled in there and I had to sleep for a couple hours. If I hadn't have done that, I may have been dead.
Yeah.
But that's cruel and inhumane working conditions. So
we need to have Bill Watts on so you can find
this. This is what I would do. I would take somebody that was convicted of a heinous crime, murder, rape, or something, give them a job just driving a wrestling car around those days. They would never, ever, ever do another crime. And they handlock them to the car so they can't leave. And I just have to drive you around all the places. That is torture, brother. It is really torture. And when I think about it, some of those guys were drinking too. So it is, and I've said this before, it is a miracle that more wrestlers weren't killed on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy work.
Having said that, we're going to shut down this podcast. We will see you again on Friday, every Tuesday, every Friday. The new episodes are released at 1 p.m. UK time, 8 a.m. Eastern. You can get them on all podcast platforms, on YouTube, of course, as well. We have books somewhere. I've written two. Dutch has written two. We have T-shirts. Descriptions are in. The links are in the descriptions. And if you want to email this show in with your question, questionsfordutch@gmail.com. I'm sorry we didn't get to the dozens we get sent every week. We try and pick out the best. Send them in again if you don't hear from us for a month. And you never know, we might ask it that time. But for now, thank you very much for watching. And Dutch, go Clemson.
Oh, yes, go Clemson. Season's opening up in about 3 weeks. Go Clemson. We the people.